All right, Alexander, let's talk about the Trump 28-point peace plan, which has been published. Ukraine media, Ukraine parliament members, they published the 28-point peace plan. At least they claim this is the 28-point peace plan. The New York Post confirmed that this is the peace plan, according to their sources. Russia has not said anything yet. Maybe they will by the day's end. Your thoughts on the 28-point peace plan? It is quite different than what information we were getting just 2 days ago, as far
Yeah.
as the details of these talks between Witkoff and Dmitriev were about. It actually is very different what
Yeah.
we're reading in this document. Anyway, what are your initial thoughts on it?
Right. Well, it is so different, in fact, that it reinforces a view that I have that there are multiple versions of this plan floating around. I mean, it's possible that we have a spinning operation and a deception plan going on at the same time, that the Americans are telling things to the Russians and are spreading stories in the media which are not true. But overall, I think it is much, much more likely that the Americans are doing what I'm afraid has happened on previous occasions, which is that they're telling different parties different things, trying to get everybody to agree in a hurry and a haste before the end of the year to something that in fact everybody is getting different versions of. So this is different. I mean, there are points here in what the Ukrainians have published which are fairly consistent with what we've been hearing. I mean, Ukraine not going to join NATO, for example, that Ukraine is going to have to change its constitution back to neutral status. That is what the Russians want. Ukraine has to withdraw from Donbass. There is massive confusion in this document about all kinds of provisions. So, I mean, Russia is to have de facto sovereignty over Donbass and Crimea. What does that even mean? And then we're told that the document is legally binding. So, if it is legally binding, how can it be de facto? I mean, there's already absurdities there. There are other absurdities as well. Russia to join the G8. The Russians have repeatedly said they don't want to join the G8. So why bring that up? I mean, that is absolutely irrelevant to this whole topic. The board that Trump is going to head to supervise this, which is obviously lifted straight from the Gaza plan. Again, very difficult to see why the Russians would want anything of that kind. And then we have complete muddle about security guarantees. So security guarantees which are not being explained properly. Then there's talk about NATO having fighter jets in Poland. Then we hear this morning from Axios something which, by the way, is not present in this version that the Ukrainians are publishing, which is that the security provisions are only for 10 years. So what's supposed to happen after 10 years? But again, you can also see that there's other things there that would please the Russians, like no troops from NATO in Ukraine, no Western troops in Ukraine. There are other things, though, some of them which the Russians would not have been happy with, like the idea that the Russians rent from the Ukrainians, Eastern Donbass. I mean, that doesn't appear there. But then this plan, this latest version that the Ukrainians have, does not say, importantly, that Russian is going to become a state language. And it makes no reference at all to the
Church.
status of the Orthodox Church.
Right.
So you can see that there's different things being said in different places. The media, somebody is briefing parts of the media to give the impression that some things are being agreed. And the one document that we have seen, as I said, isn't consistent with all of that. Now, I'm going to suggest what's happening here, and I think it's particularly difficult to work it out. the Financial Times is saying that Witkoff started on this process 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago puts us exactly at the time when Putin met with Gerasimov and the generals, and the Russians announced the fact that the Ukrainians had been trapped, Ukrainian forces had been trapped in Pokrovsk and Kupiansk. And I think at that moment, somebody understood finally in Washington. And when I say somebody, I mean Trump finally understood in Washington that the story has been spun for the last couple of months, that the Ukrainians were holding their own, was absolute nonsense. And the one thing that it seems to me that Trump is obviously frightened of, terrified of, is that there's going to be a fall of Saigon moment. We saw that when Kabul fell in Afghanistan, Biden's reputation never recovered. Trump wants to avoid that at all costs. So he told Witkoff, for heaven's sake, get something sorted out with the Russians and the Ukrainians fast before the end of the year, so I'm not faced with something like that. So that Witkoff, since then, has been working away. He's been talking to Dmitriev. Clearly, these have been conversations which have been conducted mostly with Dmitriev in Moscow. So these are phone conversations. There is some reports that Dmitriev came to the US and met Witkoff in Florida or something of that, and who knows? But anyway, there's been some input from the Russians. So you can see that some of the things are tilted a little bit to the Russians. There's also, however, attempts to, as I said, satisfy the Ukrainians, or at least get the Ukrainians on board by making various concessions of various kinds to them. So the Russians have been told one thing, the Ukrainians have been told something else. But there's a huge rush to try and get something cobbled together as quickly as possible before the military situation collapses on the front lines. And it's even less coherent than it appeared when we discussed it in the live stream that we did with Daniel McAdams, because clearly, as I said, it's not really thought through.
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks with just about every single bullet point, to be quite honest, on this peace plan. There are no details or any specifics, clarifications on certain points. For example, it talks about Ukraine not getting into NATO, and Ukraine not getting into NATO being enshrined in the NATO articles or NATO guarantees, promises. Trust me, bro, Ukraine is not going to get into NATO. And it also says no NATO expansion. NATO's going to promise no more further expansion. Once again, trust me, bro, we're not going to expand. But I mean, how are these mechanisms going to work? You said this is going to become internationally binding under international law. It's going to be binding. But how? I mean, you don't have any of the mechanisms as to how this is going to be guaranteed. What NATO is just going to promise? We're not going to expand. Yes. Okay. Russia's supposed to believe this? Sure. Minsk 3 then. That's what we're talking about, right? So, I mean, there's nothing really to grab onto here. As you read this document, it says that Ukraine's going to enter the EU.
Yes.
Okay. What's the difference between the EU and NATO?
Well, exactly.
Right? I mean, if it enters the EU, does it also become part of of the EU army, which is going to just be an offshoot of the NATO army? Right? I mean, we've been talking about this at length, right? The whole Ukraine entering the EU as the EU is talking about entering into a conflict with Russia in 3 years. Trump is going to be the leader of this entire peace plan. He's going to be the chairman of the board once again. Yeah. So Ukraine is now Trump's?
Yeah.
The frozen assets.
Yeah.
Russia's going to give $50 billion to the United States, and Ukraine's going to give $50 billion or $100 billion. The EU's going to pitch in.
Yeah.
I read that part, and this looked like the United States coming in and saying, we're going to get money from you, Russia, and we're going to get money from you, Ukraine, and we're going to get money from you, Europe. Because we're the neutral mediator, right?
Yeah.
This is how they position themselves. We're the neutral mediator.
Yes.
And so we're going to get money from all sides.
Yes.
An incredible part of the a condition in the in the peace plan. Donetsk. Russia, Ukraine pulls out of Donetsk, it says. But Russia, when you read the sentence, that's what we have as a sentence.
Yeah.
Once again, there's no detail to it. But when you read it, it basically says that, yes, de facto recognition of Donbass or Donetsk, but this is the important part, it's a demilitarized zone.
Yes.
So Russia, it's a freeze. Russia doesn't really have Donetsk.
Yeah.
It becomes more of a freeze because it's a demilitarized zone that we de facto recognize as Russia, not de jure, de facto, but it's demilitarized. And of course, Zaporozhye and Kherson. So anyway, I said a lot, but I put a post on X and I just want your thoughts on it. I basically said that in summary, what I see this plan as is Ukraine capitulating to Russia. But Russia capitulating to the United States.
Effectively, yeah.
How do you see it?
Or perhaps even more precisely, Russia capitulating to Donald Trump. Because he's going to be the chairman of the board and he's going to presumably be managing all the contracts and all of that. And can I just say, I mean, a few things. Firstly, the provisions about the frozen assets are frankly completely absurd. I mean, they are ludicrous. The idea that the Russians, whose assets have been frozen and have been threatened with confiscation of them, are going to now happily agree to give away a large chunk of them to rebuild Ukraine. I mean, that looks like reparations, which, of course, the Russians have absolutely adamantly set their face against. They've already said that they're not going to agree to that. To me, actually, that looks like trying to help the Europeans, in fact, because as we've discussed in many programs, as you've pointed out many times, it is highly likely, in fact, virtually certain, that some of the frozen assets have already been used up. The capital from them has already gone. And this looks to me like some kind of mechanism to cover the Europeans for that. Why would the Russians agree? I cannot imagine that they would agree. Then
the United States will receive 50% of the profits
from
this undertaking. So they're going to profit off of this, Alexander.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. Then there's the Donbass thing. So Donbass is de facto, except, of course, what does that even mean, de facto? And then, as I said, I've already said, legally binding in what way? But if it is legally binding, then how can something that's legally binding not be de jure as well as de facto? But anyway, the Russians are not allowed to deploy troops inside their own country. Are you kidding me? I mean, why would the Russians agree to something like that either? And who is going to be administering Donbass, Eastern Donbass? The Russians, the Ukrainians, obviously, presumably the Russians, but what form is that even going to take? So there is that. And then Zaporozhye, Kherson regions, that there is going to be a stop, then we're told that this is going to be the conflict line border. Then there's a provision which sort of seems to imply that this can be renegotiated. The Russians have made clear, I discussed this with you privately, and I'm mentioning this in other places, that Lavrov has made it absolutely clear that the Russians do expect the entirety of Zaporozhye and Kherson to be transferred to them. They're prepared to agree to a transitional arrangement to have these territories transferred to them peacefully, but they do still nonetheless expect them. There's some kind of very strange wording that seems to imply that that might be the case. Or not. It's difficult to say because it's all over the place. I mean, it's going to create, if this is the wording that's eventually used, then one can just see how there is going to be arguments and disagreements about this, and how very quickly this whole thing could fall apart. Now, to repeat again, this does actually make a departure from what we've seen previously. I mean, it's clearly a significant shift towards the Russian position. I mean, we have to say that it doesn't go anywhere close to fulfilling what the Russians say they want. And Putin, and we need to speak about Putin, and we should do in a moment, but Putin again reiterated just after this document was published that all of the provisions of the special military operation must be fulfilled. So it doesn't look as if he's in any kind of mood of give and take here. But anyway, what this can serve as is a discussion document. It could be used as a basis for a negotiation. But this would be a long, complicated process. It's absolutely not going to be resolved by the end of the year, as Trump appears to want. And given that, I mean, I can't help but think that it's going to not be able to keep pace with the very rapid developments in the military situation. If something like this had been proposed by Trump and his team after he was inaugurated in January, it would have marked a major breakthrough. We could have had a serious negotiation between the Americans and the Russians at that point, and something might have come of it. But now, at this point, with the Ukrainian forces collapsing in Donbass, it's too little too late. So it seems to me, from a Russian point of view.
Right. Discussion document. I agree. Maybe this could be a document that Russia and the United States can discuss over the next year or two.
Yeah.
I think that's a realistic timeline, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, 28 points is a lot to discuss. Yeah. I mean, they even talk about, the document even mentions the new START treaty as well. So, I mean,
does that have to do with this? I mean, you know, you're absolutely right to bring that up. That's absurd. I mean, you want to discuss strategic arms limitation in a completely different, different set of negotiations.
Yeah. But it's
you
in
can't
there.
Just throw everything together in this
it's
kind
in there.
Of way. Exactly. I mean, it has, I have to say this, it has a very amateur look about it. I mean, one gets the sense of, you know, people like Kushner, who's apparently also involved in this, and Witkoff and Trump himself, none of them have been in the world of diplomacy before. And they're just rushing to throw everything together as quickly as they can to try to get something to stick so that they can end the fighting before Kiev falls. I mean, this is what it looks like to me.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, the sentence about the G8, Russia's going to be invited back to the G8. What are they? Why would they want to be part of the group of losers of the G7?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, you have BRICS, and now what? Russia's just going to ditch BRICS to be part of the G8 again? I mean, it's nonsense, but it's in there.
Yes.
And this takes me to my point. Okay, discussion document, fine. I can accept that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this over the next couple of years. We got a bunch of points here.
Yeah.
Some are connected to Ukraine. Some are not. But let's sit down over the next year or two and hash these things out as the United States and Russia. That makes sense. Yeah. But that's not how this was positioned.
No.
This has been positioned as a peace agreement.
Yes.
Exactly. So, I mean, and allegedly, according to the Financial Times, Zelensky's going to sign this, or he's expected to sign this by Thanksgiving, and then it's going to be presented to Russia.
Yes.
And so if Zelensky signs it, or even if he doesn't sign it, all the blame's going to fall on Putin and Russia on this. And we're going to get back to the same narrative of Russia. Russia does not want peace. You see, I presented, Trump is going to say, I presented a beautiful 28-point peace plan. It was beautiful. There's never been a peace plan like it in the history of the world.
Yes.
And Putin didn't want to sign it, or Putin wanted to talk about it, or Putin wanted to delay it.
Yes.
And then we're going to enter a cycle of more escalation.
Yes.
Because Lindsey Graham's going to jump on that, and all the neocons are going to jump on that, and the media is going to jump on that.
Yes.
So I guess my question is twofold then, or maybe I've got three questions to throw at you. Is this document for real? Or is this a fake out? Is there a real document that's floating around and this is the joke document? That's question number one. Off of that question, how does Putin allow himself to get dragged into this? Because the Russians are very, if there's one thing Russia is when it comes to diplomacy and documents and legal contracts and agreements, very, very professional, right?
Yes, yes.
How did they allow themselves to be dragged into this? I mean, this document is, I mean, if a professor was going to grade this document, they would give it an F.
No.
Right, and it has Russia's and allegedly or somehow through Trump's marketing, through his messaging, through the media saying this is connected to Russian officials, Russia's been dragged into this as being part of these talks.
Yes.
So how did Putin allow this? How did the Kremlin allow this? And my final question is: was this part of the talks in Alaska? I mean, was this actually part of what Lavrov was talking about when he said that in Alaska we had an understanding?
Well, right. There's a lot to say here.
Yeah. Like
the first thing to say is that I think that this document is for real. And I think there are other documents that are also floating around, which are also for real. And as I said, I come back to what I said at the beginning. Different people have been shown different versions of this plan. And apparently, and the media are saying that the Ukrainians have already tweaked part of this plan. So there were apparently in one version of this plan, all kinds of provisions about investigating corruption in Ukraine, which the document that we are now being presented with doesn't show. So there are different versions of this.
Of which Umerov negotiated this, by the way, according to sources, which is interesting in and of itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there are different versions of this floating around. As I said, the Russians have presumably, or at least Dmitriev, remember, he's also not a diplomat, by the way. I've been shown one version. Others have been shown other versions. The Russians officially are saying that they know nothing about this, that they've heard that there is some kind of discussion underway, that it is a discussion between the Americans and the Ukrainians. Obviously, Dmitriev is up to something, because we know that he has been. But the Russians are saying that as of this time, they have been presented, formally speaking, with nothing. And this, as we're making this program, the Russians are also saying that they don't even know whether or not it's true that Zelensky has said that he really is prepared to negotiate and discuss this document with Trump. Now, this is the point to say, by the way, because absolutely, from a Russian point of view, I think this document, as it stands, cannot work. I mean, they will say that. There's lots of very interesting ideas here. It's moving things forward. Well, it's taking us in the right direction. But this is going to need an awful lot of work, at least a year to get this together. And of course, in the meantime, the military situation is evolving all the time, and we're not going to slow that down. So I think that, by the way, the Russians are going to stick with that. But of course, there's the other side, which is what the Ukrainians are going to say, because I cannot imagine Zelensky and the Ukrainians agreeing to many parts of this document either, changing their constitution so that they become a neutral state again, giving up completely on NATO, withdrawing from Donbass, these kind of things. Again, even the provisions about about protecting minorities and things of this kind, going to be very, very difficult for the Ukrainians. So I suspect you're quite right. I think what happened is that this was there was an earlier version of this document. It was then worked over with Umerov. I suspect Umerov took out more things than just the anti-corruption elements of it. In other words, he tilted it further towards the Ukrainian side. And what we have, the Russians are going to say isn't going to work, and they're going to push back on all sorts of provisions, and they're going to say the frozen assets thing is nonsense, the demilitarized zone in Donbass is nonsense. We have to have much greater clarity about what's going to happen in Zaporozhye and Kherson region. We're not interested in the G8. And this whole business about the START Treaty is important, too important to be thrown in as, you know, one talking point in a document like this. So they will say that, and they will say, you know, this is something that you've come up with. We've had some input in it, but as it stands, we're not going to accept it. And we're not going to be embarrassed by it either. Now, Putin made some very interesting points because he went and met the military people and he said things about the Ukrainian government. He said, this isn't a government at all. This is a criminal gang, that they have no legitimacy and no legal authority, that they have usurped power, and that they're using that power in order to enrich themselves. And he brought up the topic of the golden toilet and did so, by the way, using extraordinarily crude language, as Putin sometimes does. So as we've discussed privately between us, and as the Russians are quite openly saying, what they're now looking for is regime change in Kiev. For the Russians, this is an indispensable part of any negotiation process. It cannot end with Zelensky. They've already said Zelensky has no legitimacy, no authority. So one of the things the Russians are going to come back to the Americans with, and they're going to say, look, you come up with all these interesting plans. Some of them we can work with. Some of them we can develop. But the core of the problem now is Kiev and this criminal operation that is in control there. And that has to be changed. And that is an absolute precondition of moving forward with any negotiation. Now, given the incredible language that Putin used, I don't think that he's going to retreat from that. And of course, Trump has made it an awful lot easier for Putin to talk in this way, because of course Trump has also talked about another government, the one in Venezuela, as a criminal operation. So why not? Why can't Putin do the same about Ukraine?
Good point. Very good point. Yeah. Ukraine will adopt EU rules on religious tolerance and protection of linguistic minorities. Okay, yeah. Let's adopt the EU rules on human rights, okay.
Which have been completely not enforced.
Exactly.
This is, by the way, a very, very sore point with the Russians, because the Russians have repeatedly brought up the fact that the position, the status of Russian speakers in the Baltic states has been terrible, and that there have been attempts to try to get the Europeans to take action to protect the position of Russian speakers in the Baltic states. And notwithstanding that the Baltic states are members of the EU, the Europeans have refused, not just the European Commission, but also the European Court. Just saying.
Yeah. The document does mention the Nazi ideology. It does mention that.
Yeah.
But it mentions it in the context of all Nazi ideology and activity must be rejected and prohibited. So, I mean, that could be taken to mean, you know, everything. Okay. Yes. It doesn't specifically focus in, zero in on Bandera or anything like that.
Well, right? What does that even mean? I mean, you know, we're all in agreement about that. We can all agree about that. But as you rightly said, what if the Ukrainians were to come back and say that Bandera was not, did not follow that ideology, which is, of course, what they do say. I mean, some of us who know the history would argue otherwise, but that the Ukrainian version of history is that he was not that at all, that he was a Ukrainian patriot. So again, saying something in this vague way doesn't take us very far. By the way, you mentioned that it's a vague document. I saw that the Russian, official Russian news agency, TASS, made exactly that same point about it. And remember, that is a official Russian news agency. And I can't help but think again that that must have been discussed with people in the Kremlin and the foreign ministry as well.
And they say it will be rejected. All Nazi ideology will be rejected when the United States and Ukraine and other collective West countries have voted in the UN in resolutions not condemning the ideology multiple years. So, I mean, that it completely contradicts the voting pattern of the collective West, the United States and Ukraine.
Exactly.
It also does say that there's going to be elections in 100 days after the agreement is signed. Yes. So it does say that.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is I mean, there are elements that you can see the Russians want. There are elements which are intended to please the Europeans, the thing about the frozen assets and all of that. There are other elements which are intended to satisfy the Ukrainians. As I said, just as Dmitriev has had some input into this, so has Umerov.
Yeah, the peace council headed by President Trump. All parties involved in the conflict will receive full amnesty for actions committed during the war and will undertake not to file claims or pursue complaints in the future. That provision in the peace plan, my understanding of it from reading the reports from the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times was actually talking about corruption and having a proper audit of everything that was given to Ukraine, and Umerov changed it around and he basically said, no, you have to, because of the scandal that we have going on, everyone's going to get full amnesty.
Exactly.
Myself, Yermak, Zelensky.
Exactly.
So they're spinning this. It's interesting. The media is spinning this as if this is a Russian benefit. The media is very deceptive. And they're spinning this as if, oh, well, Putin's going to be left off the hook.
Yes.
But they're wrong about this.
No,
this is Umerov who changed this in order to get them off the hook.
Exactly.
From having any legal consequences from the corruption that took place. And I imagine not only them, I imagine a lot of other more important people outside Ukraine as well. Yeah. Basically, all the theft that has taken place will be forgiven.
Exactly.
from everybody.
Just coming back to the point that you made, the Russians getting blamed when this all falls apart. I think that they're by this point, I think the Russians just.
So I come back to my question. How did this happen? Yeah. I mean, because, I understand what you're saying, but how did Russia just not get on top of the messaging? Did they just allow the Trump White House to run with this? I mean, how did they let it get to the point where this thing is published?
Well,
I think that's a fair question.
It's a very fair question. I mean, I think, again, there are going to be questions about this in Moscow. But to say it straightforwardly, the Russians are very good at some things. Negotiations, the hard work, the professional part of negotiations, they're very good at. Public relations, they're awful at. And the way the Americans are able to spin things, the Russians have never got on top of that. And Putin is absolutely not interested in this. It's a major blind spot that he has. But there it is. I mean, that is the reality. I think the Russians just don't care. And I think it's a major mistake they make not to care.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem.
Well, the Axios article is published on Wednesday, I believe.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been best for Russia, the foreign ministry? The foreign ministry did issue a statement
Yeah.
But maybe they should have issued a stronger statement, or maybe Peskov himself should have said something along the lines of, we have no idea what Axios is talking about.
Yes. Yes.
And we reject any of these claims that we were involved in any kind of negotiations.
Yes.
Because the result of these negotiations, at least what we're being led to believe, is that the result of these talks between the United States and Russia is this dumpster fire of a document. Yes. I mean, Russia's name is attached to it.
Yes.
Well, and it's interesting, Alexander, because it's being promoted as the U.S. and Russia negotiating this document, and the yes. EU and Ukraine were kept out of the loop.
Yes.
So wouldn't it have not been better for Russia to say, no, we're not involved in a peace plan. We are involved in talking, but not a peace plan.
Yeah.
At least not this thing.
They absolutely should have done that. And I'm going to say something here about this, because clearly the Russians were aware that something was going on. I mean, Axios spoke to Dmitriev. Dmitriev, who is not a diplomat, by the way, and who should not have been allowed anywhere close to this, was clearly having some discussions with Witkoff, and in his usual excited and over-optimistic way was talking it up, all sorts of ways. So we can never be sure that Axios is reporting him fully and, you know, correctly. But for that very reason, Dmitriev should never have agreed to speak to Axios at all. But I'm going to say something here. The Russians were caught by surprise by the Axios leak. And I think they were very angry about it. They knew that this was going on. They did not expect this all to come out in Axios in the way they did. They obviously complained about this to Witkoff. Dmitriev obviously complained about this to Witkoff. Witkoff then rushed out a message on X, in which he obviously blamed Kellogg. He said that it had been leaked by K. Well, there's no mystery as to who K is. K is obviously Kellogg. Quite possibly it was Kellogg, by the way, who leaked this. And the Russians, as always happens in these situations, were caught flat-footed, and they didn't respond rapidly in the way that you said that they should have done. The Russia is a very professional operation in everything except media relations. They simply don't get it.
Yeah. And why did Kellogg leak it? If it was Kellogg, let's assume K is Kellogg. Let's assume don't know, but let's assume, why did this K person leak it? In order to do exactly what you just said, in order to catch the Russians flat-footed, to embarrass them, and to eventually get to a point where Russia is once again blamed.
Correct.
For not wanting peace, which will then result in more escalation.
Correct. Absolutely. The one good thing about this is that it does seem, though, that Kellogg has lost Trump's confidence. He's announced there's been no formal announcement of any kind. But the reports say that he's leaving in January, which I believe to be true, by the way. He's been telling Trump for months that all is well on the battlefronts, and that Ukraine is winning, and that the Russians are useless, and that the Americans could easily whip them and all that. And I think that what's started this whole process is precisely the fact that Trump has realized now that none of that was true. So it does look as if Kellogg is leaving, but like, as they say, a dying wasp, he has a sting in his tail, and he stung the Russians by leaking this document with the effect that we've seen.
Yeah. All right. We will end the video there, theduran.locals.com. We're on X, we're on Rumble, we're on Telegram. We are also on Substack. So check us out there. And the Duran shop link is in the description box down below. Take care.